interview with Rafael and Isabel Mendoza. Have I pronounced your names correctly?
Correct.
Rafael, I understand that you were born in Mexico, is that right?
Yes, I was.
Whereabouts in Mexico?
Apatzingán, Michoacán, Mexico.
Okay. Where is that in Mexico?
It's real south of Mexico City, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And when were you born?
2158.
Okay. And how long were you in Mexico before you came to this country?
I was 9 years old.
9 years old?
Okay. Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about those first 9 years? First of all, were you living with your parents during that time?
Yes, I was. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what did your parents do in Mexico?
Well, my father used to come to the United States every year and go back and visit us like for a couple of weeks or so. Mm-hmm. Then sometime in 67, he got his passport to come to the United States.
Okay. And when he would come to this country, would he work here and then come back?
Yes. Yes, he would.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of work did he do?
It was field work.
Field work?
Yes. Irrigation.
And what part of the United States would he come to?
I believe it was Stockton. Stockton, California.
Okay.
Yes.
Stockton, California. And what was your life like in Mexico? What do you remember about growing up as a boy in Mexico?
Well, I remember we were very poor, very, very poor. I have good memories. Although we were very poor, we were like a happy family. That's what I can remember.
Yeah. Okay. And did your mother work in Mexico too then? When you were growing up there. Or was she just taking care of the family?
She was taking care of the family, and she would watch for other folks. And then my father would send us money to survive. Mm-hmm.
And did you have jobs as a boy in Mexico to help your mother out or anything like that?
No. Or no, I can't say that I remember I had a job, no.
Okay. What sorts of things would you do as a boy in Mexico to play or to amuse yourself?
Well, marbles.
Marbles? Okay.
I remember we used to play a lot of marbles. A game called the trompo game. There's a top.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And well, that's what I can remember.
Okay. And did you live in the town?
No, we lived out in the country.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so you had a lot of open space around
yes.
you.
Yes.
And did the family farm or raise your own food at all, or anything like that?
You know, my father would start buying cattle. He would send money, and when he would go over there, he would start buying cows. So he built it up to where he considered to be a successful cattleman.
In Mexico?
Yes.
Okay. And so, would you sort of help take care of the cows then, or is that part of what was going on there, or did he have, was the ranch somewhere else?
Actually, when I remember the times that we were really poor. Then we came to Mexico from the age of 9 to 14. We went back once a year.
Okay.
And I remember at that time, we weren't so poor. So me and my father would go out and buy, we would go out to the far country and we would buy cows. And that was a lot of fun. And I think now that I go to California and pick up product, it reminds me of that. So I believe that's a good memory that I have of Mexico.
Mm-hmm. And when you first came to this country, was it to Stockton then?
We came to Stockton, yes.
Okay. And you were there for how long?
It must have been about, I don't know, a good 6 to 8 months.
Okay.
And then some fella from camp was recruiting people to pick berries. And we came to live to at Jerry Stankersley's camp,
which is
in North Plains.
Oh, in North Oregon. Plains. Okay, so that's when you came to
yes.
Oregon. It was just within a year of the time you arrived
yes.
this country.
Yes.
And you were working in the fields then at that time. Or?
Yes, we worked very hard in the fields.
Bad. So you worked on the picking berries and
picking berries, cucumbers, raspberries, all the field work mm-hmm. that there is.
And the whole family was doing that?
Yes, the whole family.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you must have been going to school also in North Plains or? Or were you with that?
You know, to be honest with you, my father, at one time he thought he could, him and I really enjoyed cattle, and at one time we thought we would earn money here, and then we would go to Mexico. So, all that I remember here is just work and work. He told me he wasn't going to give me education because he just wasn't ready for, he didn't feel that I needed education for the work that he thought I was going to be doing, which would be, working at a farm.
Maybe raising cows.
Raising cows.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I can honestly say that I did not have any education because he would put me to school and then some job would come out. He would take me out. It was very devastating. It was really hard for me. So I learned to work. He taught me the basics of life and hard work, and I learned that well.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Learned how to work hard.
I learned how to work hard.
Uh-huh. And so you didn't go to high school either then?
No, I didn't.
Okay. What about language? When you first came to this country, I assume you probably didn't speak English, or did you?
No, I do not.
Was that difficult for you to learn the new language, or how did that go?
Actually, it was very difficult since I didn't have education. It was hard. I remember starting to communicate somewhat when I met my wife, Isabel. That was in 79. 77. Yeah, I believe from there on I started to speak more English. But
up till that time when you were...
Yes. Yes, my English was very poor because it was all taught at jobs.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And you had to learn to speak English when you met Isabel because that's what she spoke.
Yes. Yes.
How did you two meet?
We met at a dance in Forest Grove.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then you began to see each other after that.
Yes.
And you were still working in the fields at that time. Or?
No, at that time I was working for Hoodies.
Oh, okay, that's right. I remember that. I got that in my notes somewhere. Yeah. So you got a job at Hoodies in what year roughly?
77.
Okay.
77.
And what were you doing there? Just working on...
I was a machine operator.
A machine operator.
Yes.
And then the two of you got together. Must have been... Well, did you start talking about maybe starting your own business? Or how did that happen?
Well, there was a fella that asked us to go in a venture with him, and because it wasn't a whole bunch of money, I believe it was like $500 from our part. We thought we would go for it, and we did, and that's how it started.
Oh, and he was going to do a store also, was that?
Yes, there was a gentleman here in Portland by the name of Fajardo's. He was ill and selling his little store that he had.
I see. Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, and you had to come up with $500 to buy it.
Yes.
Okay. Actually, before I ask you about the business, there's one other thing I'd like to ask you about, and that is when you first came to this country and came to Oregon, apart from the language, did you have any other difficulties from another country, and how did you adjust to being in this new community with American people and so forth? How did that work for you? Did you ever have any problems with getting along with people out there, or any discrimination that you might have encountered?
No, I just remember our family being real close and just working all the time. Mm-hmm. So that's the memory that I have.
Uh-huh. And do you think that people that you worked for treated you well and fairly?
I believe that because we worked so hard, people had a lot of respect for my father and for the family. That's what I remember.
Okay. Uh-huh. And then, okay, so you bought the the business for $500. And I guess Isabel was working too at that time, right? For
Washington County Community Action.
Right. And so how was it getting that the business started last year?
Well, I'll tell you, to me, that was a hobby, because where I worked, you know, they would give me 8 hours, and I just had a lot of energy, and I'm glad that that opportunity came about, because I felt that Hoodies, I really didn't have any responsibilities, but just a normal employee, so I would work my 8 hours and go home, and, you know, it would be kind of boring. So when this came about, it was the perfect thing.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I enjoyed it, and I still do.
Mm-hmm. Where was that first store then?
It was on 2nd Street.
In Hillsboro?
127, I believe, south.
147.
147, Southeast 2nd in Hillsboro.
Okay. How did you run the store? Was it just open in hours when you could be there, or did you have employees?
We started off opening like after work, and on weekends we hired someone to help us. So we kind of went with the flow, you know.
Okay. Maybe I should pick up with Isabel and bring her up to the same point in the story. So you were born in Wyoming in 1957, is that right? And what was your family like in Wyoming? What were they up to in Wyoming? What were they doing?
Well, my father worked for the railroad.
Okay.
At the time. Excuse me. He worked for the railroad, and I was real young. I was only 5, and we moved to New Mexico, where my mother's family was at.
And you moved with your mother, too?
With my mother, right.
And your father had left then?
Yes, he abandoned us. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my mother pretty much was raising the 7 kids.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was that difficult thing for you?
Oh, very, very difficult, yes. It was very difficult at the time. Because, of course, we also come from a very poor family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we couldn't really depend on anybody financially other than, you know, just the moral support that a family brings or should bring.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember living with my grandma a short time, and then my mother soon after started working. She worked for the school district, and then.
As a young child, did you have much of a relationship with your father?
Occasionally, it was mainly in the summer. They'd send 2 or 3 of us to Wyoming to spend some time with him. You know, like a month or so at a time. During our summer vacation.
Okay.
Right. And then once we were old enough, then the younger kids started going. It was always the younger kids that went to spend time with him.
Uh-huh.
And last time I remember going was about when I was about 9 years old.
Okay.
8, 9.
And you don't remember him too well from those years from when you were you know, those first 5 years?
Oh, yes, I do.
Okay.
Oh, he was a wonderful man. He was a wonderful, how can I say, He was a wonderful father, and he was a good provider, and very family-oriented, but, you know, his drinking took him to the grave. And that was his main problem. The problems between he, right. Right. Yeah, he, yeah.
And I suppose the economic situation of that would probably wouldn't help him.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So then he moved to New Mexico in 1962.
Right.
And you told me that you were, your mother and you were involved in the food service business?
Yes.
New Mexico,
yes. Actually, it was a family business. As kids got older, in order to make ends meet, my mother set us up in a restaurant, and between the seven of us, we would help her. And she would set up, and we'd help her, like, came our lunch hour. We'd have to run to the restaurant, help her for lunch, and then after school we all participated. And it was, we're three sisters and four brothers, and the sisters are older, so one helped mom in the kitchen and the other two in the front, dealt with the, you know, the customer. And the brothers did the peeling of potatoes to make french fries and did the cleaning of the grills and sweeping and mopping at night. So we pretty much took it on as a family. In our younger ages, as kids, well, mom worked during the day in the school and in the evening in the theater. So, and that was mainly to make ends meet at home, you know, just the responsibility, the needs. And as far as those kids, my brothers would go and pick asparagus and spinach, and they'd sell them little for home bells, pails. I don't know if you remember those buckets, morel buckets, lard buckets.
Yeah,
they'd fill those and they'd go sell them to make money to go to the movies and stuff. And us girls would do house cleaning for people, and painting and ironing. I had a couple of elderly women that I'd clean their home. Well, I'd do an 8-hour job for them every Saturday, and I'd walk 2 miles every Saturday to get there and get that work done. But it was fun. $5 a day. Mm-hmm. And I did laundry and clean house and actually polished wooden floors. And not every Saturday they had different assignment for me, but every Saturday I started with laundry and I hung outside, and while the clothes dried, I'd do house cleaning or polish their pants or their floors or whatever, but whatever assignment they had for me. And before I left, I did all their ironing for $5 a day.
Mm-hmm.
And a piece of pie.
Yeah,
because they always had homemade pies. Peach pie and ice cream. Yeah.
I guess I didn't ask you, where in New Mexico is this?
Mora, M-O-R-A, Mora.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what sort of place is Mora?
It's a real small, we call it a valley.
Uh-huh.
But it's real similar to, now, as an adult that I've gone to Mexico, no Mexico, right? It's real similar to Mexico, isn't it? Real dry, real, very, it's like a little ranch, kind of, yeah, no supermarkets, they're just all small little stores and gas stations and little taverns and, you know, small school, population, about 3,000-4,000 people. Yeah.
And is it a Latino community or?
I'd say 98%.
98%.
At that time, then it was. Now, you know, people have come in and they've bought property and out in the, you know, the park areas and have taken over and made camping grounds and, you know. But at the time that I was there, I'd say 98% Latino.
And so you went to school there too?
Oh, yes. From kindergarten to graduation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what was school like for you?
I love school. You know, it's a big part of my life. I love school. I was in sports. I had lots of friends, and school was a big part of my life that I remember because I had so much fun.
Uh-huh.
And I enjoyed school.
And you did well?
I did very well, yes.
What were your favorite subjects?
Math and spelling.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you said that you were running a restaurant. I assume that it was a Hispanic restaurant or a Mexican style restaurant, or was it?
Again, if you go back to that Tex-Mex.
Okay.
You know, so it's Mexican food and American food. We had a restaurant that sat, I'd say, at least 75 to 100 people when we started. And that consisted of just your main full menu of Mexican and American food, you know, hamburgers, french fries, cheeseburgers. And then in the Mexican food, we did the basic enchilada taco thing. But then we had that place for about 3 years. And then shortly after that, we got another business, and it was real similar, but a little larger than a Dairy Queen. And at that time, it was called the Dairy Mart.
Okay.
And of course, that included, you know, all the fountain drinks and ice cream sundaes and all this that we didn't have at the other place. It was more a setting of like a Dairy Queen, but bigger.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this was the place instead of the previous restaurant? Or
right.
Did you run both of them?
No, no. After 3 years of having the restaurant, then we had the Dairy Mart.
And I see here in my notes that one of your jobs when you were running a restaurant was you made tortillas, is that right?
No. I made tortillas for a godmother when I was about 10 years old.
Okay.
That's before we had the restaurant.
Oh, okay.
And every day after school, I'm on my way home because we walked home from school. Every day I'd stop and make her fresh flour tortillas for her next business day.
Uh-huh.
I hated that.
Oh, you didn't like that.
No, but it was a job. Right. And she paid me and I put money in my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
But that was one of my first jobs,
yeah.
Making flour tortillas.
And at a certain point you moved to Oregon.
In 1975.
Actually, in New Mexico, you had other family members too.
Oh yes, I have. I still have a lot of family members in New Mexico. I have a sister that is a teacher. She's been teaching for 12 years, and then I have a brother that works for the State Highway Department, and of course I still have like nieces and nephews that live in the Bernalillo County, uncles and aunts that still live in Mora County, and lots of family. I still have lots of family in New Mexico, Colorado, California, Wyoming. Mm-hmm.
Why did family decide to move to Oregon?
Again, with there was a family that was recruiting for the berries.
Okay.
And my mother came up with that family. I was at the university at the time. And she moved up here with my brothers. I came up here for Christmas. And
what university was this?
New Mexico Highlands.
Okay.
University. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you just started school.
Yes, I had just gone to quarters.
Uh-huh.
And my mother came up here for the summer and decided to stay. They went to work in the fields, and because my brothers were so young and my mother had never worked in the fields, they financially couldn't make it. So they moved it into town and got in through like a CETA program.
Oh, yeah.
For adult and youth. And they got job placements immediately, and they saw the opportunity in Oregon and decided to stay.
So the opportunity in Oregon worked better than
Oh, yes.
In New Mexico.
Absolutely. Oh, yes. yes. And then I came up in December the 6th, and the next day I started working at the mink farm in Forest Grove, Montanos Mink Farm, just to make enough money for Christmas.
Now, if I remember correctly, you had a daughter
yes.
at this time, and she was in Oregon. And
yes.
was part of
why I came up here. Yes, yeah. I came for her and just spent Christmas with the family.
And then you just never quite made it back.
Right. I thought, well, when we came up for the holidays, we were so broke, I thought, well, we need to make money for Christmas. And then an opportunity came up to start at the beginning of the year, the first part of the year, at Community Action, Washington County. And so I thought I'd give it a try, and I liked it. Never went back.
What did you do on the mink farm before we get to Washington County?
I actually scraped and stretched the mink.
Mink
hides, yes. Yes.
It sounds like that wasn't the best
job. Oh, it was nasty. I had silk-filling hands, but I'll tell you, nasty. The first few days I couldn't eat. I ate for days. I mean, it was just so nasty. I'd come home smelling like mink, and they knew I was coming. They'd make me change clothes in the garage. So I had all that stuff splattered all over me, all that fat.
Oh, yeah.
But, you get used to it, and, I just knew that it was temporary, so I did okay with that.
And what did you do? What was your first job at Washington County?
Receptionist.
Washington County Community Action.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about that organization?
It's a non-profit, privately funded organization that deals in client services, emergency and emergency. They have a client service department where they deal with homeless and hungry and people in crises. Their heat power turned off and help people, set them up, the children in Head Start, get them started with that. Then they have family advocates. They have heating and rent assistance sometimes. They provide food baskets. They work real close with the Tualatin Valley Food Center, food banks. What did they have? At the time that I was there, they had a youth service, kind of like a summer CETA placement job placement. They had the Retired Senior Volunteer Program at the time. We worked real close with linking up services in Washington County for our families. So it's a wonderful place to work.
And you worked there from 77 until 92, was it?
92.
I assume you didn't do the receptionist job that entire
time. Oh, no. No. I started out working as a receptionist and then receptionist secretary. And then I got an opportunity to work in the fiscal department.
And
agency was offered an opportunity to close the books for one of the Albina community actions here in Portland, and so I was offered that temporary position for 2 years. So I thought this is a perfect time to an opportunity to learn in the bookkeeping responsibilities here. So they sent me to a couple of night classes to learn the basics, and then I worked in the fiscal department for 2 years, and then from there, after the 2 years, I moved into working part-time in the physical department and part-time in the client service department.
Okay.
And when I started working in the client service department, I started again answering phones, receptionist, and that led into screening the clients, you know, for eligibility and making appointments. And shortly after, I was an actual intake worker, and then moved into the supervisor position. Supervised for several years.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine you got a pretty good view during those years of the clients that you served. And
oh, yes.
And some feeling for the kinds of problems that
Oh, yes.
And what kinds of things did you see there in terms of the people that came to you?
Well, a lot of it hit home, you know, in reality, people struggling. You saw a lot of people that, that were in need, that needed more self-help. You saw people that became dependent on programming. You saw people that you had to actually go and do outreach so they could come and get assistance. Every situation is so different. I don't think in the years of my service there, I saw two situations alike. Well, they might be similar, but that was what was the most exciting and challenging about the job, is that every case that came through was different, and you had to just pretty much analyze the situation and work from the bottom up. And really, what I can say about working in client service is you have to want to be there to do a good job. You have to think a lot with your heart.
Uh-huh.
Oh yeah. If you don't have that, it's really hard to do a good job. But I enjoyed.
But you had that.
Oh, I'd still be there. But you know, the business is ours, and you have to be where you have to be. But, you know, we pretty much have to stand back to back and support each other as far as the business. But, you know, I'm thankful for the business, and you know, I'd be there,
uh-huh.
You know.
And so the two of you met at Advance in Forest Grove,
mm-hmm.
And you were telling me out in the warehouse, maybe I should bring this up, but the first time you invited Raphael over for dinner.
About the enchiladas. Yeah, I invited him over for enchiladas, and when he came over, sat down, he says, "I thought you were making enchiladas." Just because our, you know, that's when I started realizing how different really our culture was and what we were raised in than the actual Mexican culture here,
uh-huh.
You know.
And you'd never been to Mexico?
Never.
To that point?
Never. Uh-huh. Well, I had been to the border.
Yeah.
Juarez.
Okay.
I had been there, but...
Yeah.
That's as far as I had been.
Uh-huh.
He now has taken us out, the children and I, to several parts of Mexico and to know. And we've been around a lot of the Mexican culture that we could go and appreciate in Mexico, you know.
Uh-huh.
So people ask me now, "Are you Mexican?" Yes.
So. Okay, so anyway, then the two of you started the business in 82, and both of you were still working your jobs.
Oh, yes.
Can you tell me what you thought about getting involved in this business venture?
Well,
when you first started.
Right. I never saw myself as a business person. And I never thought I'd be involved in the nature that I am today. I didn't expect the business to grow as it has, I always thought it would be pretty much, like he called it earlier, a hobby for him. And I just figured it would be his baby. You know, I felt pretty secure where I was at, what I was doing. I was doing what I enjoy most. And although I always participated, we worked evenings, weekends, holidays. We worked many hours in a day. You know, there were mornings we'd see the sun go down and the sun come up, you know, just because we had to do it ourselves. We had an employee that worked during the day. When did Aleli start working? From the very beginning, wasn't that? We had Aleli.
Yeah. Started working weekends.
Yeah. And we had one employee. And we both kept our jobs. I worked full time at my job besides the business till 92. And you kept your job
till 1990.
90. So we both stayed in our jobs for quite some time after.
And when you first started out in the business, was it profitable right away, or?
No. There were times we had to put our paychecks in the business.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know.
But it seemed like it was a good investment at the time, or maybe you weren't quite sure.
Well, you know, everything, as the business grew, as it was growing, because we had very little understanding about what we were doing, where we were going, that we could pretty much just focus on a day-to-day. So it was interesting for us to be able to even see. It was a whole different business at the time. We just had very little knowledge about how to run a business, and all we knew is that we had to take care of what we had, and all we did was invest in the business, and thinking, okay, we want it to grow. That was our focus, you know, is we wanted it to grow, and we knew that when it wasn't making it, we had to help it out. And it just kind of soured us as a child, you know, just another member of the family we had to take care of financially, it was just, I don't know, it was hard. It's kind of hard to answer that question, because at the time, if we had the knowledge we have today of the business, then I think we'd be way out there.
So you learned along the way.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. We learned it the rough way. You know, we had no leadership for many, many years. And it took a lot of sacrificing, him going out, doing a lot of research, bringing back information, me following up, and it took a lot of work between him and I, you know, and a lot of sacrifice having him away from home and the business, you know, which put extra weight on me. But
What kind of research were you doing when you take off?
Well, it was very difficult to get products over here. We didn't know where to get them. So I would spend lots of time in California trying to find out where they were coming from, who was selling them, and all this. And it took a while. It took a while.
So when you first bought the business, I assume the previous owner must have had some relationships with wholesalers and so forth.
Very, very little. Not. He was more into Spaniard items. We eventually got off of that.
What kind of items?
Well, it was like dolls and.
He was from Spain, so he, you know, his all his product was mainly from Spain. You know, the certain seasonings and their their gift items, their music, their,
right.
You know, a lot of that. So it, we really, we purchased, we did the initial purchase from him, but it wasn't anything that we were...
You changed the focus.
Yes, right away. Yeah, because the community that in our area is more Hispanic than they are. Than but here in Portland.
European,
right.
So you go to California and try to set up, you know, supplies,
yes.
connections, and so forth?
Well, I believe we have, now we have the connections necessary to, you know, to do well. But I do still go because it's a growing business, and we have found out that, you know, we started making it. We've been successful by me going. So I want to say that I can see myself going to California for at least a couple more years.
See, and the advantage about Rafael going to California also is there's always new contacts. There's always new items we're looking for. There's a lot of the research, kind of like what we talked about earlier, is we'd go visit stores out of the area and see what items they're carrying, what new items, Hispanic items that they have that we don't have, and we'd bring stuff, we'd either get it around here, or, you know, we go to the Washington area, different, yes, or even I'd go with him to California and we'd visit little stores and we'd pick up, buy things and look at the, you know, look for the distributors, and then I bring him home and follow up and make the actual contact. Then he'll go and make the pickup and meet the people, and, you know, it's a whole cycle that we have to, you know, to keep those contacts. And there's, like before, you know, we were buying in such small quantities that, you know, he'd go and make the pickups for those small quantities, and now the pickups that he makes are, you know, because of freshness, or because, you know, like, let's say blankets, we don't buy it by the truckload, which probably next year we might have to, but because he's had to bring them every week. But him going just has, you know, saves us a lot of money, and still to be able to keep that contact, and that eye out for new items and new distributors, new contacts, or whatever.
And when you go to California, do you drive down there?
I drive.
Take a truck down or something?
Yes, I have a truck.
Mm-hmm. And you do it once a week?
I do it once a week.
All the way to Los Angeles and back?
Yes.
We used to do it in a 14-footer.
Yeah.
And then he bought a 24-footer. And that's helped us out quite a bit, but we know we need a bigger truck, and like I say, he accomplished his getting his CDL Saturday. And
what's the CDL?
Commercial driver's license.
Commercial driver's license, okay.
Able to drive a 18-wheeler now.
So you can drive an even bigger truck down there.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I suppose in the beginning, when you made those trips to California, it was not, maybe not only hard to find the contacts, but you probably were in a good position to negotiate favorable prices.
Exactly.
Right.
But that's changed, I assume, over the years.
Oh, yes, in that. Yes, it has.
Right. They come to us now. There are a lot of brokers that come and see us, and that we have actually a lot of our product is through main brokers now here in the area. So it's exciting.
Well, Can you tell me a little bit about the different stages of growth in the business? So you started in a smaller store, I assume, on Second Avenue in Hillsboro.
Well, we started at that 147, which was just a little bigger than this room, where we initially started, with one showcase, about 12 feet of shelf that were half empty, cash register, some shelves behind us with gift items, and that was it. Then we moved to, what was the other?
What's the name of the business, Sukasa?
Yes, it's always been Sukasa.
Okay.
Then we moved to a space about four times the size, right? But how big was that size?
Yes, it was about, we did four moves there in that area.
Three moves. The one that we initially started in?
Yes.
And then the one where, when Idma worked with us, with the paneling in the back, remember? The curtain. And then we moved where Western Auto used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been in the Hillsboro area, Bob?
I don't know it real well, but I've been out there.
Yeah.
I used to live in Lowell, actually, so it wasn't too far away.
Do you remember Western Auto on 2nd Street?
No.
No.
But that was one of your locations, too.
Yeah, what's the now, Farrell's or something like this, Farrell's Dress Shop, or that's when we, the business grew a little.
So up until that time, it was smaller places.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it started like, what would you say, about how many square feet?
Probably at least 500 square feet. Not very big.
Not very big. And then the next one? Perfect.
So that was the very first shop.
That very first shop.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And then the other one was, I don't know, maybe 1,000, and then we went from that to one that had 3,000, almost 4,000 square feet.
Mm-hmm. And how did you build your clientele? Just by offering the products?
It was a need in the area.
Uh-huh.
And when we moved to this one space, we also opened up the bakery, which was a brand new thing in town, Hispanic bakery, Mexican bakery. So we offered that, the music and all the religious items, you know, for the traditional baptismals. And
this was when you moved into the Western Auto.
Yes, and like I said, the traditional baptismals and communion and religious celebrations or items that are needed, like for marriage, and which were a lot of new things to me. And then also we increased or expanded our music department at the time, too.
And what year was this space?
What year did we open the bakery?
It must have been 87, 88.
Surely around there.
Mm-hmm. So you're still both working full time at your other jobs at this point?
Still.
Yes.
Uh huh. Uh huh. Oh yeah.
And but you must have had several employees at that point.
We had like two employees at the time in the store, and then we had two bakers.
Mm-hmm.
We had two bakers at the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's by the baked goods that were in the bakery now.
Right. Well, they would make them.
Yeah. Well, they make them
on the premises, yes. Okay. We had an in-house bakery.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so did you have to set that up, I
believe? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. It was pretty costly, too.
Yeah, I bet.
Permits, install gas lines, and install the exhaust fans and everything else that the building required. It's a big building with two stories, you know, so it was pretty complicated.
So at some point, maybe it was at this point that the time of reaching this case, but at some point you must have thought to yourselves, well, this is no longer a hobby, but this is a real business. When did you say that?
It became, that point came in 1990. We moved to the space we're in now, which it used to be Sunshine Pizza. Mm-hmm. And since Mexico wasn't in my mind, I kind of decided to give it all I had into the business and be real focused. And it so happened that one time my landlord, Cameron Warren, asked me how far I wanted to be in business, and I told him that I wanted to be like Fred Meyers. So he talked to me for a while, and he told me, you don't have, you have the will, but you don't have what it takes to be that far. So I'm gonna help you. So he started teaching me as my father did. He started teaching me financial statements. He started teaching me certain things that has made us successful, I want to say. And I do want to say that if it wouldn't be for him, we probably wouldn't be here now.
So he was real important.
He was very, very important.
He was your landlord at the time?
He was my landlord, and he's the one that owns this park here.
Oh, okay.
Cameron Warren.
He was also his mentor.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so he helped out a lot.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
He said he owns that property out in Hillsboro as well as this
yes.
place.
Yes.
He used to.
Okay.
He doesn't own it anymore. Right?
He passed away in 1996.
But his sons took over the business, and now they own all of park. Is it all of Park Rose that they own?
The whole park. He owns. He owned Clackamas Business Center out in Clackamas. And at the time he passed away, they had bought about 100 acres up in Airport Way. So he was a very successful man that decided to teach me the ropes. And I'll never forget that. And I want to say that he one of the reasons that he said he was helping us was so that we could help our employees, and everything has come together. And I still want to say that I want to really dedicate just about everything I do in the business to him, because again, I think that if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't be here. I think I was making all kinds of mistakes, and he taught me how to be successful. So if I'm not successful in the future, it's because I probably didn't pay attention or whatever.
Well, what kinds of things did you learn from him?
Well, first of all, I think the financial part of I never understood. I didn't believe in that. I knew that when he first came to me, he says, I'm going to check your books, and if your books look fine, I'm going to help you. And what I did, I took the books, my statements from the CPA that I had, and I went over to his CPA so that he could feel comfortable. And what I can say is that, you know, hard work is one part, but believing in those financial statements is also a big part, which I lacked.
So you weren't paying that much attention to it?
I never paid much attention. And what he always told me was to pay attention to those that make decisions from the financial statements. And that's what I do. I do that, and I also teach all my employees to the same thing.
So what kinds of decisions would you make based on a financial statement?
Well, I guess it comes to this. If you're making money, grow. If you don't grow.
Spend if you have, if you don't have.
Okay.
Yeah, it's very simple, but it was very difficult for me to understand that concept.
And you make decisions on what kind of merchandise to carry based on how that merchandise performs then? Is that in financial terms?
Well, that's pretty much my department there.
Okay.
Because I do the buying.
Right.
So, and it's based also on the numbers on the financial statement also, what kind of volume we could buy and, you know, where we're at, whether it's too much inventory. And, I mean, the financial statements tell us if we've got too much inventory or, you know, not our percentages aren't, up enough, or quit buying, roll your merchandise. It speaks to you. And speaks to all of us and all our responsibilities.
Mm-hmm. And the landlord,
Cameron Warren.
Cameron Warren, yeah. So would you say that he was your friend as well as the landlord then?
I truly believe so.
But I assume that it didn't start that way, right? Or he was probably just your landlord in the beginning? Or?
He was our landlord, but he always showed interest in our business.
Uh-huh.
And then when he saw the enthusiasm in Rafael, because he used to speak more to Rafael, then I mean, they'd meet more.
Uh-huh.
And I think he saw that Rafael was a real hustler and real sincere person, and he saw that he needed some leadership and therefore offered himself. And he always, no matter how busy that man was, you know, what kind of business schedule he had, he always found time for Rafael. And I think the reason that Rafael also, too, you know, looked up to him is because he didn't have... that man spoke to Rafael straight. I mean, he told it like it was. He didn't hold back, and he wasn't insensitive, but he was very direct in what he said and what he meant. And when he saw that Rafael was absorbing his leadership and advice, and then he was more encouraged to help him more and help him more. So he came down on him a couple of times. I mean, when Rafael wasn't listening or wasn't following through. I mean, and I think that's why it was like a father-friend respect, but a great leader, because we're able to see his success, and I mean, you know, actions speak louder than words. So therefore, we knew that we were in good hands under his guidance for sure. Yeah, we really appreciated him. Still do. We will never forget Mr. Warren.
And so that's what what you were referring to earlier when you said that there wasn't really leadership in the business. Is that
right?
Right. At least in the beginning.
Yeah. We had no business, with no sense of business. In my earlier years when my mother had the business, I was never aware of, you know, the financial part of it or even how she ran the business. It was just, you know, her responsibility, and that's all she did.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You know, I just kind of was still young, and I was